My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. Episode here, new week, and new chance to kind of try out this new format. Hope you liked the way it was kind of presented last week with the single guest. I'm sorry, I found a piece of trash on my foot, and it's making noise on the microphone. I want to get this episode done and recorded, so that's going to stay in. It's permanent, part of the canon. So, yeah, hopefully you enjoyed the new format last week with Thomas and having just the single guest. We, did chat about some games up top and kind of want to help continue that. It's almost like a light icebreaker into the try to stump my guest icebreaker into our main topic will be the format. So I had some fun this week with Andrew Elmore back again and chatting up some more stuff. Also, another... interesting note, last week we had the got to hear Thomas's console story. This week we're going to hear Andrew's console story. I could have chosen a different topic or a different recording of a different question, but it's, again, one of those things that I can kind of veto and control myself because it's my podcast and it's my call, and I thought this conversation was fun. So we're going to go back-to-back weeks with console stories just from two different guests. But that's it. I've got the new website, pixelsandpolygons.net, that you can check out where you can buy books directly from me. And when you do buy them directly from me, you get cool things like the retro trading cards that I made during my Kickstarter campaigns for the books. And maybe some bonus stickers and odds and ends kind of thrown in there. So buy direct from me now. They are available, and it is a way to support me directly. The books are all the 32-bit library books are also available through... Amazon still, so use your quote unquote local Amazon if you are international. They use like this kind of printed service like via Amazon, so you can actually, if you order it through like Amazon UK or what other worldly domains they have, you may be able to kind of ship it directly to you locally and save a bunch of money on shipping. So definitely encourage you to do that if you've been wanting to check out those books and not wanting to pay international shipping. So that is the benefit and option there for you through Amazon. Otherwise, I've got my Kickstarter wrapping here in about 2 days from when this episode releases for the new project I'm working on, the Retro Game Zine. That has ended up being very successful. And so instead of just getting the first issue, I just basically was doubling down, and now you get two issues. So the first issue covers... a little slice of It Came from the Desert, and the second issue covers a Sega Genesis classic that you can read about if you go to the page, and you'll have the links in the show notes and everything below here. But I plan to do maybe like a quarterly, it'll be like a monthly thing, but I'll kind of release it in like quarterly batches so folks can kind of like save on shipping and maybe just kind of revisit it that way. I'm still kind of playing with the idea. Maybe it's just released digitally monthly, and then I do a printed batch, you know, for folks to have them order it direct. Whatever. I have a roadmap of a bunch of cool issues planned, and some guest writers with their takes and their thoughts on the individual games that will be covered within that. So it's a cool project, a little 28-page zine, and it's kind of fun. Oh yeah, and then I did the on Patreon, my Patreon.com/Darren Hupke. The tier that the paid tier used to get the bonus podcast, but now it's going to be this like single postcard review of the month thing. I just think until I have like a more, unique angle to take with a solo spoken like podcast. It just wasn't as exciting to me to just talk to myself about like extra topics and things weekly. So I pivoted to this, but you can take a look at that on Patreon. I've already written up the first couple of months of reviews available. And so I got the postcards for these first batch like already in. They came out pretty cool. So get a cool giant postcard, not a giant, standard size postcard, but a giant screenshot from a classic random game each month that you can put up on your wall or put on the fridge or just kind of hang somewhere just to kind of stare at. But on the backside will be a simple review and a score from myself. And I kind of like to think of it as like the smallest magazine that you can get. So it's just a one-page magazine with a single game review, and that'll be mailed to you every month if you are a monthly supporter on Patreon, which helps pay for costs like the podcast hosting website that I use for producing this, or for paying contributors and collaborators on like future projects and kind of keeping the website cost for pixelandpolygons.net. So there's things that happen on the back end that your support goes to help. So appreciate y'all. Long-winded upfront stuff I have to do every week, but it's my thing and I gotta sell my stuff and do all that jazz. So I'm done here now. Enjoy the free podcast episode and the fun conversation I had with Andrew, and come back again next week and do it all over again. Enjoy. Bye. All right. Well, let's just roll through. We'll just roll into it. This is starting. This is recording. This is happening.
So am I.
welcome back to another episode, Andrew, of the cast. What do people
call it? Hello. Thank you. Happy to be back.
People call them pods. Welcome back to the pod. I don't know. I always like chatting with you, so I think these episodes we're getting ready for recording here should be entertaining. So the pressure's on for you to make them entertaining.
Oh, okay.
but to lead into things, I mentioned it a little bit offline right there before I pressed the record button, but new format, so we'll maybe chat a little bit up front. But maybe I'd like to ask you, is there a game you finished this year that you think might be on like a top 10 list of yours, or is there like a memorable game you've played maybe in the last year that you think is going to stick with you, or has there not been anything too exciting for you this year?
Oh man, yeah, there's been a ton. Let me try and look up really quick what I've been playing through this year, so I can try to give you something resembling a realistic answer here. Let's see.
Balintro.
Haven't touched it.
Well, you have homework.
It's not very helpful, is it? Let's see. Well, that's not a helpful list. Let's see. What else can I open up?
What was the last game you finished?
I don't remember. What was the last game I finished? I'm just I've been working on SMT5 Vengeance for so long, and we've been going back and forth between that and East 10.
Oh, the new one.
Really?
Yeah. I've been in the same boat. I've been playing Persona 3 Reload, and I just keep thinking, like, as soon as I finish this, I can move on to a new game. But basically, I paused it just when that Final Fantasy VII Rebirth or whatever came out, and then essentially went back to it. And basically, those two games have been my 2024, with just a little, indie things in between. But yeah, it's just been a little slower year.
Those are two very large video games, to be certain. Yeah, Rebirth is a strange one. I have so much love and so much frustration for that game, in equal measures, I think. But yeah, I'll, the parts of it that make it dozens and dozens of hours longer than I think it needed to be were the parts that I tended to try and skip past as quickly as I could, anywhere that I could.
I was like, for the first, the first 70 hours of that game, like 100%ing and like in full on completionist mode. I got the platinum trophy for the first, like the remake, and then the intergrade, like I beat that like on hard mode and everything. I was like, yeah, I'm just going to keep this train rolling. And the pacing of Rebirth made a lot of sense. Like, it opened up and sprinkled in new things, like, at a decent enough pace as you were going through. So I was having a good time with it. And then I just hit this point where they just basically refreshed all of the games and mini games and things you had previously explored. And were like, hey, here's one more level and one more tier of all these things, in addition to a new mini game thing that you can be related to, as well as sprinkle in this late game content. Like, this is how you unlock this special area. And I was like, okay, I can't keep up anymore. I'm not going to beat the game if there's literally this much stuff to do. So I had to make the commitment to just cut off completionist mode, see the game through to the credits, and then hope maybe one day I'll go back. But I don't think I'm ever going to go back to fully 100% that thing.
And I can't imagine what the person who does looks like. And I feel bad if that's you listening to this at home. I applaud your patience. I just I don't know who that is out there that they're designing for. Because for me, I'm deathly allergic to that stuff. As soon as Chadley's like, oh, hello, sirs, I've opened up all of these new things on your map for you to go do, I'm like, I'm going to stuff you in a wood chipper, you little turd. So I don't respond well to busy work and video games.
He's got his own battle arena, and it's like, oh, cool. Like, you'll sprinkle that throughout the game. Got it. But then you find a second battle arena and you're like, oh, wait, what is this place? Oh, okay. I guess I'll do what I'm doing there. But now I've just come to here. And then you realize there's a third route to even go. I'm like, okay, gather these all up. Like, oh, love the game, though. I just really think in my head, if they cut some of that content out, even a good chunk of it out, would that have meant it could have been released much sooner? And could we be that much closer to this inevitable ending of it all? Like, you don't need that would have much. Been
a much better selling, a much more successful creative work if they had cut out roughly 2/3 of that game. Not in terms of the actual content and everything, but just all of the chores that thing lays you down with, and all of the big extraneous, massive AAA bloat stuff that just doesn't work. A lot of the extra mini games and stuff that they added on there are just not, they're distinctively unpolished compared to everything that surrounds them. And so it's a game that's just you can smell the money radiating off it at every turn. Mm-hmm. And then you get to a point where it's just oh, this is not, this feels like something that maybe you should not have, pointed all of these resources at necessarily. Yeah. There's so much stuff in that game that we're just you didn't need to spend all that much money here. You've made it worse by adding more stuff to it. I don't know. When that game is just hanging out and it's, just a cast of goofballs hanging out and, living life and doing all that weird stuff, it's incredible. It's unmatched. It's amazing. But so much of the rest of that game is just trying to push me away at all times. I'm just I have to fight to enjoy my time with this thing.
Yeah. I mean, I still have the nostalgia glasses and the fanboy in me. And I don't think I hated any bit of the content necessarily, but it was just so much of it. You could have just cut significant chunks of it out, and that would have still made me the target audience of it. Oh, wow, this is great. I love this. This is well paced. Now we're ready for the third one much sooner. But it took that long and that much time, and there was that much of it that it was even too much. It was I can eat a chocolate cake there's no tomorrow. But then if you start adding on, Reese's peanut butter cups on top and drizzle it with this, there is such thing as too much chocolate. And I experienced too much Final Fantasy VII with Rebirth.
Yeah, it's Homer trying to put a bunch of king size candy bars on a donut and calling them sprinkles. It's not.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. That was that game. But my next game, when I'm done with Persona, one day soon, I hope, I want to play that from the same Persona team, that Metaphor, Refantasio. Yeah. So I know I'm just getting in another deep end of the pool, as soon as I'm done with it. So I don't know when I'm going to play real video games, but eventually I'll get to other video games in my life.
I've heard they exist. Why RPGs so big? Why so many of them, and why so big?
Yeah, I mean, good job people making them, but there's a lot to them.
Yeah, it's my backlog. Having not really played any RPGs as a kid growing up, it's my backlog of stuff that I want to check out now is I don't know if I've got that much time left in this mortal coil,
It's true.
Yeah, so when I go down to play Rebirth, I'm like, man, that was a great boss fight. I would love to use that in a summon in a later fight. And you get a big pop-up thing from Chadley that's like, do you want to come fight this thing 19 times in my battle simulator to get the summon? I'm like, no, I super do not, actually. So I guess I'm just not going to get that. All right, bye.
Opt out.
But, yeah. I feel bad because like, there are things about that game I could sing the praises of forever and ever and ever, but we'd be here all day.
Yeah. Cool.
So we'll just complain and then move on.
Yeah. As I think I made it clear. I'm the fanboy. The game is for me. It's just a lot, you know.
So I'll complain and move on. Yes.
I've said nothing wrong. Don't shame me. Don't come at me. I'm a fan. Let's get into the icebreaker. So
let's do it.
I just made this one up right before we started recording. If you had to compete in a fighting game tournament, which one would it be? So like Mortal Kombat, the King of Iron Fist tournament, the Street Fighter tournament, like any.
Oh,
any
like
of
the
those.
Actual tournament, not like a fighting game tournament, not like sit down. Okay.
Oh, yeah. If there was like if any of those were real, which one would it be? And then maybe that's not as the exciting question, but where would your stage location be? Because, of course, you've got to fight in your stage. So
there we
where
go.
Is
that's
that?
A good one. Yeah. Someday people will convince Harada to put the Waffle House in Tekken, but not yet. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. The only fighting game that I've ever personally like super clicked with is Bushido Blade. So I kind of want to just say that because that would also be kind of funny. But I don't know what the like. I don't want to say lore. That's not the right. Like, is there a narrative to Bushido Blade that I just like have been skipping through all these years? Something
I think it's the warring like factions trying to determine where the future of like the Bushido and I think it's just two different diametrically opposed like families and clans. I think at a battle and then
I guess, but then
influenced.
It ends up with like a gunfight on a skyscraper with a helicopter pad and it's I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's like Last Samurai-esque, you know. The outside influence is, you know, influencing their natural culture and it's Tom Cruise is the villain essentially is what it is.
Yeah, next to a dying Ken Watanabe on top of a helipad in whatever city that's supposed to be. Let's do that and then for a stage. Let's see, what would be a good silly stage for Bushido Blade? I'm going to go with the parking garage by the train station at the Tacoma Dome. How about that? For the like one person in the world that might know what I'm talking about.
Okay, there it is. There it is. That's where your fight is held. Okay, interesting.
Sure, yeah, that's our quiet wind wisping. Standing there staring each other down from 20 feet away, holding swords, not moving, you know, very Sergio Leone. That's it, just in a shitty parking garage in Tacoma. There we go.
So Bushido Blade, I'm not going to say it's off the table, but it's been selected. So that means Clay Fighters is still there for anybody else who wants to answer the question. I don't know what tournament they're fighting for, but, they're
all
fighting for something.
Whatever's the most important.
Cool. Well, then let's get into the main question, main topic. This one's kind of some storytelling. I really like this one a lot, and I've heard from a few folks already on this one. But tell us your console story. So tell us a little bit about, you know, pick one from your history, from your childhood, from whatever that you have an attachment to. And just tell us a little bit about, you know, when you got it. Was there a build up to it? Was there exciting, you know, games that you played that you loved that stand out? Were there like any memories associated with it beyond gaming itself? But yeah, just tell us that console story and maybe what that console is. That's it.
Yeah, for sure. I think, did I talk about my story with the Xbox on this show already? Is that a thing that we've done?
You know, as great of a memory as I have, and it is my show, we spoke a little about Xbox a little bit. I think we were talking about the Dreamcast once, and then that, of course, brought us to this, like, Xbox Dreamcast 2 type environment, but it's never been a full-fledged like story or conversation. So if we're retreading similar ground, I'm okay with it.
Sure. All right. I apologize in advance if I'm wrong and we totally have to talk about this, but yeah, I think, like, I don't know if I necessarily have an extremely compelling personal history with any of these platforms, but like the one that I think of as like the big, like, watershed moment or whatever in terms of acquiring a piece of video game hardware is unwrapping that Xbox in Christmas of 2002. So before that, we'd gone from Genesis to N64, and in 2001, or like late 2001, early 02, we had followed the like news or whatever around the Xbox, but basically at some point it came out and I played Halo at somebody's house, just I remember being blown away by just the level of, you know, like, detail and fidelity and stuff that I was seeing on screen, and just thinking, like, the game itself seemed incredibly cool, and it just felt like a weird, cool thing from the future. And yeah, so I think my dad was really into it as well, and I believe he was the one that probably bought it in 02. And yeah, so I unwrapped that thing that morning, Christmas of 02. So it was the pack that came with the double disc that had Jet Set Radio Future and Sega GT 2002. And then it also came with, we got Halo and one of these smaller non-Duke controllers, because it came with a Duke controller. And then Tony Hawk 2X and 3.
The Xbox controller S is what I believe it was called. Yeah, they love that letter.
Yeah, S for slightly less large is probably what that was. But yeah, no, I think that was a big moment in terms of, like, here is a box that can show me a whole bunch of new things that can be done with video games. And I think that is kind of one of those early seeds that ended up sending me down the path to where I am today, for better or worse. One of the things that cursed me to land where I am was just being introduced so early on to, I think really it was that selection of games, and then, you know, obviously everything that came afterwards that I was able to explore following that on the platform was huge as well. But I think just getting the right like a bundle of weird, cool games thrown at me at the right time in life, because I was, like, you know, not even 9 years old at the time. Sorry. But that was, it was a very early time to be introduced to something as wild as Jet Set Radio, or something as, like, jazzy and sunset oriented as a Sega GT 2002. You know, obviously Halo ended up opening a lot of doors, both aesthetically and thematically and career wise and all that stuff. And then, like, I had spent a little bit of time with some of the, you know, the first two Tony Hawk games before that, but getting 2X and 3 at once there allowed me to really, like, get way, way into those games, which allowed me to kind of develop a new interest in really, like, momentum oriented 3D platformers and games that required a lot more of your just, like, attention and precision input in a way that was not really necessarily happening on a lot of stuff on the N64. So, like, around that time I was also playing a lot of, like, NES and Atari games and stuff, but really the only games that I felt like were trying to provide a, like, difficulty ramp that was designed to be its own enjoyable thing in and of itself were mostly, like, 2D action games on the NES. There was not a lot of stuff on the N64 that I was playing that was, like, really execution heavy like that. I think one of the first games that I really, really got into that was kind of, like, in a big elaborate, like, 3D space and stuff that allowed me to really hone that kind of, like, arcadey sensibilities at home, weirdly enough, was probably those early Tony Hawks there. So I think just that like instant kind of collection of sorts one day was a big like throwing the door open on a lot of things that games could do that I was, that I would find myself personally interested in from then on out, I guess. So yeah, I just, between that and then we've talked about the weird library of the Xbox, and the strange history of that machine. I just have so much, I have a lot of love for that device and its library and all that stuff.
I had already had my PS2 and I was already like huge like fanboy over the PlayStation. Like I'd already essentially like branded myself, I have to like this, so if I like this I must not like these other things.
And
I do think that the Xbox was the one that like put fear into like, oh no, you're going to like attempt to like take apart my Sony empire, I have to defend them. An early AOL Instant Messenger username that I would use was literally, it was "Don't buy an Xbox" was the username. And why, you know, wow. Hey, I was, how old was I then? It was 2001 ish. I was like 14. So that's still embarrassing to like be old enough to like, you know, really you're going to go this hard for a technology company that, you know, is rewarding you with nothing.
You say that, but there are grown ass adults doing that right now.
Yes.
Like, all over the internet.
Yes. And but I definitely have matured and just gotten a brain that works and I can understand, you know, if I speak something out loud, it's going to be positive and it's going to like build up and share and promote something I enjoy. I will not waste energy and efforts in anything negative because it makes no sense and there's not going to be any value in doing so. But looking back retroactively, like that original Xbox is like, that was a great system. You know, like I picked one up, like, you know, like a used one, and I justified it by like, well, Microsoft's not getting the money because it was already sold once. So here we go. And there's not even any cool games anyway. So what am I going to do with like Morrowind and Shenmue 2 and Crazy Taxi? And oh, wait, there's a bunch of cool games on here. Oh, wait. Well, Halo 2, this is boring, but sure, I'll buy an Xbox Live membership just to like play against these dorks online. Like, God, this is so boring. You know, and then 24 hours later,
I'm enjoying like, this ironically. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was super cool, and I had written something recently too about the Xbox Live Arcade and like those origins like started on that original Xbox as well, and it evolved into this awesome thing on the 360. But things like ripping CDs and helping to like personalize your games starting from the Xbox, like there's so many cool things about that, and in that era where Microsoft was like really trying to like create partnerships with some like unique Japanese developers and publishers as well as produce their things. Like you saw some really strange games that you weren't really expecting other places, and like shot like Phantom Dust and these like, I don't know. It was just a really special system. And from somebody who chose to pretend like he didn't see it or recognize it and just, you know, recognize it as just the enemy, for me to like reflect on that, understand that, you know, it's because it was such a great and impactful console. So that original Xbox was rad for sure.
It's also just so wild to be like threatened by the success of the Xbox when the PS2 sold like 6 or 7 times as many units.
Yeah.
It's like not even close.
It made me feel, you know, much better, you know, and once those were happening, I was like, oh cool, I don't have anything to worry about. Whew. But what is that Steel Battalion over there? How many buttons are on that controller? I don't have that, but I don't want it because that's lame. But how much does it cost and where would I be able to play it? There's some cool things on there. And it is like we kind of mentioned it before, but going from that oddball, like really all cards on the table, like Dreamcast mentality from Sega, like it definitely seemed like that torch was essentially passed to that. They were like, hey, we're the new kids on the block. We literally have no allegiances or loyalties anywhere, but we really want to make a foothold here. So let's just throw it all out there and see what sticks. And so they kind of were able to like create unique partners and just do bizarre things. And a lot of it worked, obviously, because it led into the 360 and they're still doing it. But
where they largely stopped doing those things and found regular normal success. And
yep. He's spent more money in making partnerships with ESPN and the UFC network and putting in dashboard advertisements on their platform rather than Phantom Dust 2 or like bizarre other like games that people might want to play. But that's neither here nor there. Did you have, I threw out a bunch of random games and controllers, but did you have some favorite accessories? Like that was still an era where third party things like were still like, you know, you might have that odd Mad Cats controller or you might have to use something. was there something special that you had an attachment to, or was it pretty much like the stock and branded Xbox things is what you kind of stuck your loyalty to?
I don't know that I really had any, like accessories. But it also was not stocked very long either though. You know, within like 2 years, we were absolutely jailbreaking that thing and loading it with emulators and all that fun stuff, which was novel at the time in like 2004, 2005 to have like XBMC running in your living room on a on a machine that's basically a Windows box anyway. It is an HD console, so it was really, really easy to use it as an early media center for stuff like that. So that was neat. But I'm trying to think of like...
Well, how about this then? Do you prefer that controller S, or are you a Duke loyalist?
I think I prefer the controller S, but my hands are big enough that Duke is perfectly comfortable. So, like, I will still use it, especially for like games from the first like year or two, where they kind of expect you to be using one of those gigantic hamburgers anyway. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of like I've got one like. Racing wheel that's good for a lot of, you know, there's a ton of fantastic racing games on that machine, but the wheel itself is plasticky and cheap. I think it's an Interact. There's like one, I think it's a Mad Cats light gun I've got for the like one or two light gun games that are on there. It's like House of the Dead 3, which has one and two on it. There might be like Silent Scope or something else. Like there's like one or two other like arcade ports or something that might work with it, but that's about it. There's that one controller that looks like it was taken out of the cockpit of something out of Mech Assault. I don't remember what it's called now. I've got it downstairs. It's like this weird, it's got a screen in the middle and like trigger guards and like, it's so strange. It looks like it's made of rusty metal and stuff. It's not good, but it's cool looking. I do not remember what that's called though. So that's not awful. We had a DDR pad at some point. That's long gone now. Yeah, I can't think of anything else.
Yeah, you had some stuff, though, still. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, the Xbox, then. There it is.
It certainly is.
enjoy it, and thank you for sharing. But I think that'll kind of do it, then, for this episode. Do you have anything else you want to maybe, like, add or plug or share before we wrap? Or we just cut off the recording right here, right now?
No, let's go.
Okay, cut off recording right here, right now.